Two doses of the vaccine are about 97% effective at preventing measles, which is incredible. This is not a case of the virus outsmarting the vaccine. I see you, Subclade K. We don't have a Subclade K measles. Welcome back to Rolling Forward.
I'm Dr. Alicia Rowland.
I'm Dr. Stephanie Rowland.
I'm a pediatrician.
I'm a psychiatrist.
We are both part-time clinicians, part-time researchers, and now part-time podcasters.
Part-time.
I mean, everything together is like 6 full-time jobs.
It's true. It's true. It adds up to more than 1.0 FTE.
We started this podcast as a way to help demystify the ever-changing health landscape here in the United States.
And today's episode is one, honestly, that I hoped we wouldn't need to record.
Right. Unfortunately, if you have been listening for a while, you know that we've already done two episodes on measles, Measles 101, Measles 201.
And unfortunately, we're back doing a third episode about measles because this year has given us a lot of new data, new outbreaks, and new reasons that we need to revisit measles.
So this is an update episode. What has changed? What's new in the data? And why measles keeps coming back into the conversation, especially for families and young kids?
And we'll cover this in 4 parts. We'll start with 1, what's new with measles right now? 2, what hasn't changed? And it's important to talk about what hasn't changed. 3, why measles keeps coming back in this way? And 4, what families should realistically do at this point to protect themselves. So let's get started.
The biggest update since our last episode is that measles activity remains high. It's elevated globally, and outbreaks continue to occur in the United States. Not everywhere, but in some predictable places.
That's right. And according to the WHO and the CDC, global measles cases started rising sharply after there were COVID-19-related disruptions to routine childhood immunizations. So in the early days of the pandemic, when things were closed, families weren't coming in and weren't getting their regular child checkups the way they were before. And the reality is that many countries still have not returned to pre-2020 vaccination coverage levels, which means that there's a larger global population of people who are not vaccinated and vulnerable to measles than there was, say, 5 years ago.
In the U.S., measles is still officially classified as eliminated.
How does that work?
So it means that we have not crossed the threshold of continuous endemic person-to-person spread lasting more than 12 months. What that means is the virus spreading on its own within the country as an ongoing, self-sustaining person-to-person spread for 12 months.
But that status is increasingly fragile because what we're seeing now in the United States is that there have been repeated sustained outbreaks with significant person-to-person transmission. So once measles is introduced into a community that has less than optimal vaccination levels, we're seeing it spread and spread and spread and spread instead of the fire going out.
So over the past year, the U.S. had nearly 2,000 confirmed cases of measles. That's 1,912 cases as of the beginning of December across 43 states.
And my understanding, Alicia, is that this is overwhelmingly a pediatric story.
Of those 2,000 cases, 500 occurred in children under the age of 5, and another 786 occurred in children from 5 to 19.
So roughly 2/3 of all of these measles cases have been in minors.
And illness has been severe. Overall, about 11% of people with measles in the United States have required hospitalization. But the youngest children have a much higher risk. And more than a quarter of all children under the age of 5 with measles required hospitalization.
And tragically, there have been 3 measles-related deaths that have been reported this year.
In 2025, there have been nearly 50 confirmed measles outbreaks. That's about 90% of all cases in the U.S., meaning that they resulted from spread from person to person within communities. And for comparison, last year, there were only 16 outbreaks. So we went from 16 to nearly 50.
So what's changed isn't just the number of cases, It's also the scale, intensity, and persistence of the outbreaks, especially among children.
And many of these outbreaks still begin with what's called an imported case. Someone travels internationally, acquires measles abroad, and comes home, bringing the measles back with them.
Once measles is introduced into a community, particularly one with low vaccination coverage, it starts to spread really efficiently through school, childcare center, churches, and extended family networks.
And we've seen this pattern repeatedly, including the prolonged outbreaks in states like Texas, where measles has spread across communities over many months, requiring large-scale public health responses to contain it.
And a very recent example of this is South Carolina, where an outbreak began with a single imported case just a few weeks ago. And now it's expanded to more than 120 confirmed cases, largely among unvaccinated individuals. And there are currently hundreds of people under quarantine in South Carolina.
And it's important to clear up a common misconception. The majority of cases are not from international visitors. Of the 1,912 confirmed cases in the United States, only 24 occurred in international visitors to the U.S. This is not primarily a visitor problem. It is a domestic transmission problem.
So basically, the pattern now looks like this. Someone travels abroad, comes back with measles. They're in a community with low local vaccination coverage, allowing measles to spread. Now measles is spreading in the sustained person-to-person way. And public health agencies are working really hard to try to stop that chain before it becomes endemic.
And public health experts are increasingly concerned that if outbreaks like this continue, especially if the transmission chain stretches longer and longer, the U.S. could lose its measles elimination status, just as Canada has already done.
And that's really important to take note of, because although measles was eliminated in the United States in the year 2000, that's not a permanent status. It really depends on maintaining very high immunity levels. And right now we're seeing that slip. We're seeing measles transmission rise, and that elimination status is at risk.
But let's be clear about what hasn't changed, because there's a lot of confusion.
Let's do it.
The MMR vaccine, mumps, measles, rubella, still works extremely, extremely well.
Two doses of the vaccine are about 97% effective at preventing measles, which is incredible. This is not a case of the virus outsmarting the vaccine. I see a subclade K. We don't have a subclade K measles. So measles is not outsmarting the vaccine, but at the same time, measles is not changing. It's also not becoming milder.
Measles remains one of the most contagious viruses that we know of. It is about 6 to 9 times more contagious, more infectious than the flu.
Boo!
And being this contagious, measles can spread if the immunity of a community slips even just a teeny weeny bit. It just opens the door for measles to jump in.
And another thing that hasn't changed is the complications of measles.
Historically, about 1 in 5 unvaccinated children who got measles would require hospitalization, although it's looking like those numbers are a little higher in the past year.
Unfortunately, I think time will tell because people are continuing to get measles. And when people get measles, they're still having complications like pneumonia, and that's actually the leading cause of measles-related death. We're seeing people with encephalitis, which is a type of inflammation of the brain. People are having permanent hearing loss and severe dehydration.
That's right. One of the complications of measles is a very specific type of brain inflammation called subacute sclerosing panencephalitis. And what is terrifying about this type of encephalitis is that it typically occurs 7 to 10 years after you've had the initial measles.
And rates are highest among children who are under 2 when they get infected. So when we think about the hundreds of kids under 2 who have had measles in the past year, 7 to 10 years from now, they can develop this universally fatal brain disease.
Terrifying. Like, literally terrifying.
So, yeah. And one of the most underappreciated effects, and we've talked about this before, but is basically a type of immune amnesia.
Measles can erase parts of your child's immune memory, making them way more susceptible to other infections for months or years afterwards. This has been shown time and time again. After getting the measles, your immune system is wiped out, and it can take a long time for that to rebuild.
So measles isn't just dangerous during the acute illness. There are these complications that can last for years and years and continue to impact health, which is why it's sad that we're here again. Because, Alicia, why does measles keep coming back?
I think this is one of the most frustrating things since we have such an effective vaccine.
97%.
Such an effective vaccine.
That's an A+. That's an A+.
A+. And I think there are three main reasons why measles just keeps coming back right now. The first is that vaccination gaps are local, not national. When people hear that national vaccination rates are still high, that can actually be really misleading.
Because viruses don't care about national averages. They care about what is present in a certain community because measles spreads locally. And if you have a school, a neighborhood, a close-knit community that drops below 95% coverage, all of a sudden, measles can spread more efficiently, even if the surrounding county looks fine on paper.
And we see this in outbreaks over and over again. A small geographic area with lower coverage really becomes the ignition point.
And these gaps in coverage often overlap with schools that have really high exemption rates, communities that may have limited access to routine pediatric care, and groups with shared belief or information sources so that people are getting their information from the same one or two sources. And once measles enters that little pocket, it just starts spreading quickly like we're seeing in South Carolina right now.
I think the second reason, which we briefly mentioned, is the COVID-19 pandemic era disruptions.
The pandemic disrupted routine healthcare in ways that we're still seeing the effects of and that Alicia and I are feeling the effects of in our jobs. Because COVID-19, it wasn't just about fear. Clinics closed, staffing changed, families moved, we've had shifts in insurance coverage. And between 2020 and 2022, so many kids missed their well child visits. And this is typically when vaccines are given. Some then caught up, but others didn't, especially for families that are already facing barriers like transportation, time off work, or limited access to pediatric care.
Measles really exploits these missed moments. And what we're seeing now is the delayed consequence. Cohorts of children who are partially vaccinated, unvaccinated, clustered in specific communities. And I think the third reason that we're really seeing an uptick in measles this year is a change in risk perception.
And this is where psychology really matters, because for many families today, measles feels theoretical until it isn't. Most adults under 40 have never seen a case.
So if the disease feels distant, while vaccine concerns feel immediate and personal and on every TV screen, your risk-benefit analysis changes.
And this is happening in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. And for some families, they developed mistrust about COVID-19 public health messaging. And that has started to generalize to lots of types of healthcare, including MMR.
And when risk feels abstract, people understandably discount it.
And that's understandable, because if something feels really far away and unrelatable like measles, but the vaccine is something that you're concerned about, you might think about it differently, but you know, the reality is that measles doesn't operate on perception. Measles doesn't care what you think. It spreads based on immunity and what the coverage levels are, not on your belief and not on your intent.
So when you really pull these three factors together, the local immunity gaps, the missed vaccinations from the COVID-19 pandemic years, and this new kind of changed risk perception, you get exactly what we're seeing now. Outbreaks that grow larger, they last longer than they used to, even just a year ago.
And that's why public health officials are so concerned. Not because measles is new, but because the conditions that kept it contained, those are eroding and changing.
So let's talk about practical steps for your family rather than panic about measles, which I do feel panic about measles.
Yes, I I understand. So first, check your vaccination status. It's recommended that kids get the first dose of the MMR vaccine between 12 and 15 months, and the second dose between 4 and 6 years. But hey, if you've had a missed dose, you can just catch up. There's no need to restart the whole series.
And something else to emphasize is that children traveling internationally, children traveling to regions where there's an ongoing outbreak, can get an early MMR dose even if they're not yet 12 months old. You can give an early MMR dose at 6 to 11 months, but it doesn't count towards the series, so you'll get the two routine doses later.
And many families don't realize this until after travel plans are booked, but it's a really good option for families that are traveling before their kids are a year old. Families do that. Our family did that. It can be nice to know that you have that level of protection.
It's also important to understand exposure policies. If an unvaccinated child's exposed, they may need to quarantine for up to 21 days. This includes being excluded from school, from childcare, from sports and other activities, because measles often spreads before symptoms appear.
And that's really important to note, because this is something that's happening in South Carolina right now. And this type of quarantine, it's not punishment. It's to keep measles from spreading, because if you are infected with measles, you will get other people sick before you ever know that you have it. And so that need to quarantine for up to 3 weeks, that is a real and important step.
And that helps protect vulnerable individuals, infants over 12 months, people that are pregnant, people that are immunocompromised, rely on herd or community immunity because they can't all be protected individually.
So those are some steps that you can take to help protect your family. And it's important to know that this isn't about blaming families. It's not about blaming communities. It's about understanding how contagious diseases behave and how quickly the progress that we've made against measles can unravel if we stop paying attention.
For families listening, measles is preventable. The vaccine is so effective. And staying up to date protects not only your child, but also newborns who can't be vaccinated yet and other medically fragile people in your community that might not be able to get vaccinated.
And that's our show for today. Thank you for joining us on the Rollin' Forward podcast.
I'm Dr. Alicia Rollin.
I'm Dr. Stephanie Rollin.
You can hit us up on socials.
Yes, you should, because there's a new dog coming, right?
There is a new dog. There's a new dog coming.
We hope. Next week. So there will be puppy photos starting next week. So if you have not followed us yet, now is a good time to find us at Rollin' Forward on TikTok, Insta, all the socials. And then you will be some puppy content coming.
There'll be some puppy content coming. And who doesn't love?
I love puppies.
Who doesn't love some puppy videos?
Puppy just needs to get their vaccines first.
Puppy, gets more vaccines than humans. Maybe RFK should target that. There's Bordetella and leptospirosis are the two vaccines that are still due for this new puppy.
And then there will be puppy photos. If you've enjoyed this, please leave us a 5-star review, share with a friend. This is something that we do in our spare time, and we rely on our listeners sharing with their networks to help spread the word about our podcast.
Thanks for listening, and until next week. Rolling forward, Dr. Sister Science Facts. Okay.
Yes. Here we go. Puppy time.
Woof.